build a high-performing culture? This is Culture Architects. Candid conversations with extraordinary leaders sharing their biggest successes, failures, and lessons learned on their culture journeys. Here's David J. Friedman.
Welcome back to my conversation with the wildly successful former girls lacrosse coaches of Morristown High School, Deanna Knobloch and her husband, Casey Knobloch. In our first conversation, we talked a lot about the intentional culture that Deanna created with her players and the values and rituals and the traditions they established that contributed to the massive success that they had. In today's conversation, I want to go and talk a little bit more about some of the ways that the culture within the team impacted the players beyond the game. Talk to me about, what did you want them to learn that they would take into their lives? And maybe secondly, I imagine you've probably had many girls come back afterwards and tell you about what this meant to them in their lives. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, you know, you hope that you send these girls out into the world and that they've learned some very valuable lessons at the end of every season. And always the top of them for an athlete or a team for me would be that commitment, you know, committing yourself to something to be the best that you can be or even better than you thought you could be. You know, you're going out to the real world. Don't settle for mediocrity. You know, be the best that you can be in whatever it is you choose to do. Dedication, discipline, all of that. If you want to be good at something, you have to work hard at it. And I think we taught them that to, you know, look what you get if you work hard. The rewards will come. You know, and it didn't happen for everybody. You know, not everybody on that team is a starter, but everybody's a part of that team. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a part of the program and everybody played a role. And there, you know, there were seasons where we'd have 18 seniors and 18 kids are not going to, there's 12 spots on a field. And for us, the best kids across the board played, you know, it didn't matter if you were a freshman or a senior. And I think that's a very valuable life lesson as well. Like, you're still a very valuable part of this team, that you have something to offer, you have something to give. And it may not be on the field, but it's cheering, it's supporting your teammates, it's being there for your team, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's another one of those life lessons that they take with them, that they're always going to be part of something.
Yeah.
And how to you know, develop that.
So what's yeah? Good, Casey.
No, I was going to say for me, the experience of seeing these kids go on in life and be successful. We see it firsthand with a lot of these girls that have played for us that have moved on to coach now, maybe coach at the high school level. Plenty of them coach for us for our club program. So that's a testament to they love the sport. They've learned some lessons. And honestly, I would say that we probably learned as much from these kids as they learned from us. Hmm. You know, it's a constant evolution of trying to figure out who we were as coaches. How can we do it better? You know, and so, but seeing these kids go on and become wonderful mothers of young kids themselves now, some have become doctors, some lawyers. And I think the biggest one for me was how many of our kids went on to college and not only played the sport, but became captains of their teams. Mm-hmm. That speaks volumes to their character, their substance, and maybe to a smaller degree what they learned from a little bit from us and certainly from the program.
Right. So what I'll ask this of each of you separately. What would you say is the, if you had to pick one thing, I know there's many of them, but if you had to pick one thing that you're most proud of in terms of the impact you had, Deanna, what would it be?
Tough question. I would have to say seeing what these girls have gone on to do beyond mm-hmm. high school. You know, the relationship that we developed them and watching them grow as into young adults and women and wives and mothers, that for me is the proudest part of being a coach.
Mm-hmm. Not bad for you, Casey.
Yeah, I mean, without question, I was saying this the other day to Deanna that it's not often that I think about, and I thought it would be different now that we haven't coached for 3 years now. I thought we'd do like an introspective, retrospective look back on games. Mm-hmm. And for me, and she agreed, not at all. It's more of seeing these kids and acknowledging where they're at now in their life, and you know, them coming up to us out of the blue and saying hi, and I'm back in town, just wanted to see and say hi. Or when we have the alumni game around Thanksgiving, these kids come back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and again, coming back and coaching at our clinics, at our camps, for our club team. But again, it's seeing all these kids all around the country that are doing so well for themselves.
That's great.
I think another thing that I want to add is mm-hmm. that, you know, we've stepped away from the program now, so sometimes we don't feel as much a part of it, but one of our former players has taken over. And I'm so proud of the fact that it's a Morristown grad that is keeping the tradition going, mm-hmm. and they're doing really well.
Nice.
And they're, you know, they're having a great time, and they're having fun, and they're loving it, and they're winning. And that's a proud moment.
Yeah, and two of the assistants that she has hired were also former players of ours.
So I think all part of the family.
It's amazing.
That's great. So as you look back over that career, I'm curious about, clearly there were things that you, especially Deanna, you started at 22, as you said, and you don't know what you're doing. You're trying to figure out how to be this coach. There have to be things that the Deanna and Casey of 27 years later look back at the Deanna of 22-year-old and think, what was she thinking? You know, there's some wisdom we learned about coaching and building a program, not the technical aspects of what kind of defense we're playing, but more managing students and young people and leading a program. What were some of the mistakes you made early on that you learned from? They said, man, I don't know what I was thinking then, but now I realize that's not the way to do it.
It's funny. We were talking about this at dinner last mm-hmm. night. I was trying to think of, like, when you think back on your career, what were some of the biggest mistakes that, mm-hmm. that we've made? And for me, I can't pinpoint moments, mm-hmm. but I can say that I remember every year saying, well, that's another learning lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something that we learned every season. It wasn't every year something new came about, whether it was, you know, decisions we made during the games or how we handled a certain situation with a player or a parent. You know, you're always growing, you're always learning, and you're looking back and saying, okay, well, we're not going to let that happen again. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I can't pinpoint exact mm-hmm. moments, but I know that happened every year where I said, definitely a learning experience, and let's not try to do that again.
Right.
No, I think one that I'm going to remind her of right now, because now that we have a chance to follow our kids in college mm-hmm. playing, the one thing that I've said, and I think you'll agree, is that the one thing we would do different is playing time for the kids. I think we would have found a way somehow to play more kids. Because being parents now and seeing your kids go through the psychological aspect of the game from a different perspective, there's so many more nuances now that you're seeing it. Like, okay, now I can see why that parent may have thought that way, or maybe why she wanted to speak to us, or mm-hmm. why the father wasn't happy about this. Not that I don't think that we ever had a horrible situation and we handled it the best we could. But again, if we could go back, I think we would have found a way mm-hmm. to get more kids on the field, because then everybody, not that they weren't invested, because they were, and these kids were committed. But I think you get more investment that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the one thing that I would change a little bit. So, mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, well, we were talking about change. You know, I was thinking about the mistakes we had made along the way, but if we were to go back and coach again now,
yep.
I honestly don't know if we would change a lot of things about what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, like he said, watching our daughter go through it, I think that I personally as a coach would definitely become more empathetic towards those kids that don't get on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all great girls. They all work so hard. And sometimes you get lost, you know, it's not that I forgot about the girls that didn't play, but I would definitely make more time to go up and put my arm around them and say, how are you doing? And, mm-hmm. you know, you sometimes lose sight of that. You think they're okay. These are 15, 16, 17-year-old girls. You think, oh, they're doing okay. They seem happy, but again, watching our daughter go through some things, you learn, like, you know what? Maybe she just needs an arm put around her right now and pull aside and tell her how much you love her or, you know, what a great job she's doing. And not that we didn't do that, because we certainly did do that. But I would
do more.
So many girls in a program, there were years we had a lot of girls in that program. I would invest more time doing it with all of them.
Mm-hmm. And you have to understand, this is coming from a place where I don't think we're remotely close to everybody wins a trophy. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but because it's got to be a meritocracy too. You've got to earn it. But there's got to be some empathy, as Deanna stated. Yeah.
I had grown up as a runner, ran track and cross country there. And in the cross country world and track, there is a legendary program in Illinois called York High School. And there was a coach named Joe Newton who coached for like 50 or 60 years, literally just died a couple of years ago. And they won national championships year after year after year. And there's movies and books about this coach. And I remember seeing a movie about him, and they'd have 150 kids on the cross country team. It was just the dominant program. And one of the things that this coach did, and it gets to what you're describing, is he had a routine, a ritual, that every single day at practice, he would, at the end of practice, look every single runner in the eye and shake their hand and say, you know, Deanna, great job today, or Casey, really appreciate work. Like every single person, one-on-one, they finish practice with a handshake and looking at him eye to eye. And it was a way of saying, you're important. You may not be the best guy on the team, and across country, only 7 guys run. So you got 150 people and 7 guys are on the varsity team. But every one of them could work to be the best they could be. And he was incredibly demanding about, you may be the last person on the team, but that doesn't mean you can't be the best runner you can be. And anybody who was, you know, he was hard on people to be the best they could be. It was no excuses for not being your best. Even if your best was never going to be as good as somebody else's best. He was very demanding about that, but fascinating.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's a very similar kind of thing. So
one other thing that I wanted to add is we live kind of parallel lives from the standpoint that we each had high school mentors that meant the world to us, that taught us the way that Deanna will never speak about herself, but she was a stickler for fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're going to play this game, you're going to be really good at the small things. All right. And I think she learned that from her coaches, high school coach, college coach. Me too. I learned it from my high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact that they have on you as a kid coming up, maybe that's something that we learned and we paid it forward that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about how do you deal with, I mean, we talked about parent challenges and you know, your increased empathy these days being parents of players, that I'm sure you had many times when, as you said, only 12 people can play at a time, and you got a lot of young girls on this team, and there had to be parents who were frustrated, as you referred to, that, you know, their children weren't getting the playing time or they were feeling too much pressure, which is realistic. So how'd you deal with that as coaches?
We had a parent meeting at the beginning of every season,
mm-hmm.
probably 2 or 3 weeks before the season started. And, you know, someone just brought this up to me the other day, a woman, the secretary of our athletic director, was saying that, you know, somebody was saying how you would tell the parents, like, this is how it's going to be. And basically that's what we did. We sat them down. We told them our expectations for the team. We would talk about our expectations from them as parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we emphasize the fact that all communication should come through their daughters, you know, and that's a really hard, scary thing for some kids. I would have girls come in my office. They'd be broken out in hives before they even started speaking. But our rule was, if there's an issue, if you're upset about something, if you have a problem with playing time or you're not happy, you need to come talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want mom or dad calling us and saying, well, you know, our daughter's not getting on the field. Why not? Well, let me talk to your daughter first. And then she's not happy with our answer and you're all really upset, well, then let's go to the next step. Let's the 4 of us meet, or, you know, however many of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was always a chain of command that we emphasized. If it wasn't, you know, if they weren't satisfied with our answers, then we would meet with the athletic director, mm-hmm. and then, you know, take it from there. But I think our parents knew what we expected from them. And I know they what they expected from us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we laid it out on the line. We said, this is how it is. Mm-hmm. It's not that it didn't happen. We definitely got parent phone calls. We have a book of anonymous letters that we received over the years because people were too afraid to tell us to our face. But one of the greatest teaching moments that I feel like one of my greatest teaching moments as a coach was reading one of the anonymous letters to the team and seeing their reactions and saying, you know, what a teachable moment it was to not be a coward and hide behind words and to stand up for your convictions. And if you believe strongly about something, then you approach that person to their face. Mm-hmm. And it was a great practice after that. Like, it's so intense.
Wow.
The other thing too that Deanna would do is, especially with the seniors, because we would always have a large number of seniors that just wanted to be a part of the program. Many of whom thought because they were seniors, they should get on the field. Not so much that it was an entitlement, but they had put their time in and it was their time to shine. And typically we gave them about a 2-week, not that we had tryouts, but we would give them a 2-week period where we would give them every opportunity to show themselves. And at the end of those 2 weeks, one of the hardest things I know Deanna had to do, and I'm glad she did it and I wasn't involved, was to, you know, set up individual meetings with these girls. They would sign up, right? And then they would come in and sit down with Deanna and they would have that very hard heart-to-heart talk. And kids wouldn't leave, though. They wouldn't quit. They would stay with the team, even though they knew that there was probably a chance they were not going to play much.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it goes back to wanting to be a part of something that was different, right? Something that was special and successful. And there was a lot to be learned by that.
I'm curious about, we haven't really talked about leadership on the team itself. So how was that structured? I mean, were there certain team captains? Were there certain levels of leadership that were on the team formally or informally? And what responsibility did leaders have to bring the new girls in and show them the way we do things in the Morristown Lacrosse program?
Goes right back to the seniors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every year we'd have 3 meetings in a row. First was the parent meeting, and then we had a senior meeting, and it was just us and the seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And the seniors, they would come to our house, and we'd sit down around the kitchen table, and I'd give them a pamphlet to fill out. There was 15 questions on it, basically saying, why are you playing lacrosse? What are your goals? What are your expectations? Where do you see yourself on the field? What will you do if you don't get that position? What will you do if you don't play at all? You know, and they had to wholeheartedly answer all these questions. How do you see yourself as a leader? Do you want to be a captain? What is a captain? So we would, you know, dive into the seniors, basically because we told them from that meeting on that this was their team. You know, it was their job to lead this program. And we knew the underclassmen would follow them. And they knew that as well. However they practice, how hard they practice, the underclassmen were going to do the same. If they came out lackadaisical, if they came out, you know, whatever mindset they were in, the underclassmen were going to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
So we relied heavily on our seniors and all of them. You know, we emphasized that you were all a part of this program. You're all equally important, from the best player to that last girl off the bench. Mm-hmm. You're all a part of this. And if you're in, you're all in. And you can't, you know, if you're not playing and you're not happy about it, well, on the outside, you are sucking it up for the team. And on the inside, when you're that upset, that's when you come and talk to us. But they knew that this was their team. And we did that year after year. We turned it over to the next group of seniors. Okay, it's your year. How do you want to be remembered? That was a huge question. That was the last question I would answer. Wow. Ask all of them. How do you want to be remembered?
What kinds of things did they say about that question specifically, how they wanted to be remembered?
You know what? That question was basically more so for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
How do they want to be remembered as an individual senior? Yeah. And you know, they all said they wanted to be remembered as the hardworking teammate that was easily approachable, that you could talk to, that was also someone that you could take criticism from, that if they told you one thing, you wouldn't, you know, take it the wrong way, that they were only trying to help you,
mm-hmm.
that they were a senior who loved the program and gave everything they could for it.
One of the great traditions, I'll call it a tradition, mm-hmm. and I really think it was a teachable moment, was that Deanna made the seniors, whether they wanted to or not, get up and give a speech on being a captain, Even if they didn't want to be a captain, they were going to get up there in front of their teammates and say why it was that they didn't want to be a captain and perhaps, you know, the reason and give your reasons. Yeah. And it was amazing dynamic, especially as a guy. You know, I'm the lone guy, obviously, being there. To see kids that you couldn't get them to say two words during a practice would get up there or any time, would get up there and spill their heart and their emotions, cry. You learn so much about that kid, and their teammates learn so much about them just from that one night. Wow. It was a beautiful, it's one of those things I'll remember the rest of my life.
Emotional. Very emotional.
And the kids saw their teammates in a different light.
Right.
And I think also it taught the kids that, hey, again, you have to speak up for yourself. You have to own your voice. It was beautiful.
That's powerful.
And they knew that from that night, if you were voted captain, you know, that was definitely an honor to be a captain. No question about it. You don't take any away. But the captains then were the first ones on the field, the last one on the field. They clean up the trash. They clean up the bus. Like, their job was, sometimes they were like, it's okay not to be a captain. You know, we enforce that, even though you might not have the word captain next to your name, that you're all leading this team.
Right.
And also the players and players only voted for captains. Nice. Coaches, we had nothing to do. There was never in my 20 years of coaching any involvement in the numbers or who we felt should have been the captain. Never. So that was important too, because the kids knew that.
Yeah. And so what I hear in all of this is, and it goes to the whole example of why I highlight public high school sports dynasties, is that in the nature of high school, you're turning over your team every year. It's a whole new group. And the way and what I'm hearing is that you built this tradition with through lots of these rituals, from, you know, the speeches to the cheering to the way you practice to the way the seniors worked with the young students that weren't even in high school yet, and all these things that you did. What I hear in this is you created this tradition, this legacy, in such a way that it could be passed from team to team. That rather than it being, we just happen to have a good team this year, is that you built this extended legacy that each class passed on to the next one and to the next one and to the next one. And that really, I mean, that's my podcast I call Culture Architects, because I use that word architect purposely. You designed something, you built something. You may have adopted a lot of it in your case, Deanna, from things you learned from Lynn Schilling, but you created your own and have now passed it to the next one. But you architected, you created, you designed this culture that could be sustainable beyond just one year. It wasn't, we had a great team that year. It was, no, we built a program that could last for years so that new people came in and they learned the way we do things on the Moorestown lacrosse team. And then they passed it to the next one, the next one, the next one. And that's quite a legacy to leave. It's powerful.
Yeah, so getting to meet a lot of coaches on a national level, it was funny, because we'd often get asked, how many girls transfer into your high school or into your town? How many kids? You know, essentially they said there's no way your program can be that good unless you had kids from other areas that came and that wanted to play for you. And in the 27 years at Deanna Coach, we had one girl that came from outside the district in 27 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, I say this little town of Moorestown created something special. You know, it actually became part of the community, and it was a pride factor too, you know. And yes, Deanna will never take credit, but she was the matriarch of all this. One thing that you'll never hear from her is the visualization and the motivational tactics that she used. As a guy who played Division I sports in college, to come back and see this done at this level, at such a high level, to motivate kids, it was inspiring for me to be a part of it. So, again, it was all about the program and teaching things. I think life skills, life lessons, and that you could be better than what you thought you could be.
Yes.
We were really lucky, though, as coaches, one, to be able to coach together and share our love and passion for the game, and, you know, and be able to do that together. And while he says I was the matriarch, this program would not have been where it was without the coaching staff that we have, you know, bringing him on board. Like I said, from the beginning of this podcast, when we said, I was like, no, he's, you're not coming into coach. You don't know what you're doing. It was the greatest thing that this program ever received was having him come in and, you know, strategizing and developing plays and offenses and defenses and things that I would never have thought of, you know. And it's hard sometimes for women to open up and let other people come in, especially a man thinking, oh, he can't do that. You know, I encourage all women now, like, get a man's perspective, because it's different. It's definitely different. So I was so lucky to have him with me, and we were lucky to be able to coach this together. Yeah. And not only just the two of us, but our assistant coaches, you know, that we've had, we all poured our heart and soul into this program. One of our assistant coaches, our JV coach, was a former player who was one of the greatest players to have worn the uniform. So she came back and, you know, she was all in when, you know, all into this program. Our freshman coach was the same way. We were a great foursome, and we had, I think we were great four role models for this team, for everybody to look up to and say, look, you know, we had a great relationship. We had a lot of fun. And I, you know, this program was based around fun as well, even though it was intense and winning and all that. But again, it was around fun. We had a lot of fun. We made sure we had fun. It wasn't all intensity. And it started with the coaching staff. There wasn't a day that went by that we didn't laugh, you know, usually at him, but we definitely laughed. We had a great time together. And then we made sure the girls had fun too.
Right.
You know, whatever we did on the field, you know, whether we played games or our psych parties or things that we did at psych parties. You know, as coaches, I always say, don't be afraid to make fun of yourselves. We did a lot of silly things, you know, and we made fools of ourselves sometimes for the benefit and for the entertainment of the team to say, you know what, they're not just coaches, they're humans, they're real people,
right?
And you know, don't videos. Be afraid. Yeah, we made
videos.
One of the greatest moments of every year is we made it to the TOC. We promised the girls a coach's video. And we would spend the 2 days prior to the TOC exhausted making this crazy video that the girls just couldn't wait to sit down and watch. That's and we great. Just, you know, we make fools of ourselves for 20 minutes on video, and we had a blast making it. Some of the greatest moments of our lives and my greatest memories have happened in those videos, and the girls loved it as well.
Yeah. And by the way, yeah, for our audience members, TOC is Tournament of Champions. That's the ultimate, the best of the best, no matter what size a school is. That was the ultimate championship, is to win what was called the Tournament of Champions.
Yeah. So like I said, you know, to wrap it up, we were just very lucky as a coaching staff to have what we had together.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you both for not only the podcast and joining me for this, but also for the legacy you've given to Moorestown and to all of the girls who went through that program for so many years and the way it's impacted their lives. For our audience, you know, I said at the beginning, and I talk about in my workshops and my books, public high school sports dynasties are fascinating because there's so much we can learn from what they do in terms of creating cultures of success and the intentionality that Deanna and Casey brought to building that legacy and that history and those traditions. Those same things are just as applicable in the business world. They're applicable in families. They're applicable in the classroom. Is that when we create a culture of high performance and we do the things that are necessary to create that, we bring people into those cultures and it raises their performance. That I always say, those same, if we take your girls, those same girls would not have played as well if they were in a different school. That being in that program, beyond even the skill development, just being part of that culture caused them to raise their performance. The expectations you had for them, that they had for each other, the legacy to live to, change their performance. And the same is true in businesses and classrooms and everywhere else. You create a high performing culture and it elevates the performance of everybody. So I appreciate both of you for all that you've done. And thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. It's been great having you.
Honored to be a part of it. And you know, and honored that you mentioned us in your book. You know, you're a successful person yourself. So to be even mentioned in that is an extreme honor. So thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, David. It's my pleasure.
Totally my pleasure. Thank you. And that's it for this episode of Culture Architects with my fellow culture architects, Deanna and Casey Knobloch.
If you're enjoying this show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so that you automatically get my new shows whenever they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love it if you would leave us a review so that more people like yourself can discover the show. I'll see you next time.
This has been Culture Architects with David J. Friedman. Join us next time for more insights and wisdom from great leaders in all walks of life. To book David for your next event or to learn more about his writing, speaking, or consulting, go to davidjfriedman.com. Culture Architects with David J. Friedman is a production of CultureWise.